Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to another great episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. This is your host, Mark Jewell, and today I'm on with Michael Helms with AgRx Recruiters. Michael has a wealth of knowledge and experience he's going to share with us. I'm excited to dive into it, but Michael, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate you having me.
This is going to be a fun conversation. So talk to us right off the bat, Michael. What does it mean for you to be intentional?
So as I think about it through a business, Mark, why are we doing what we're doing? And I think you need to answer that question. Why are you doing what you're doing? And the reason, you know, the reason that businesses are in business is because they have customers. If you don't have a customer, you can't be in business, right? Everybody has a customer. So if you're doing something that isn't customer centric, that isn't focused on the customer, why are you doing it? If you're not doing something to solve a problem for the customer or to make the customer more money or to save the customer time, solve a problem for him, why are you doing it? What's the use?
Yeah.
And then, you know, in order to do that, you set goals, you know, and you say, well, how is a 10% growth goal in my company customer focused, customer centric? Well, if you've got the customer at the center of your thoughts and the center of your reason for being in business, then you know that the actions that you take to make that goal are things that help your customer.
You bet.
So I believe it's, you have to be intentional about setting goals, have to be intentional about measuring those goals and measuring the activities around those goals. And then you have to be intentional about celebrating it when you win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic answer. Probably one of my favorite. Go back to the beginning, the question is why are you doing what you're doing? Why are we doing what we're doing? Right. And that that's for on our, that's supported by pillar number one in our toolbox, which is intentional clarity. You have to be clear on the what and the why and what's it all for, and getting super, super clear and not lowering your standards, right? Just because things get hard or whatever, you can always recalibrate, but we have to be clear. We got to be clear on what we're after. So that's a fantastic answer. Michael, tell us a little bit about your background. You got a storied history in the livestock world, the feed world, et cetera. Share with us a little bit about your history.
So Mark, right out of college, prior to college, I was in 4-H, and I learned a lot of leadership skills through 4-H. I was a state officer in 4-H in North Carolina.
Okay.
And then right out of college, I went to work for Cargill for Nutrena Feeds, and ended up in a leadership position with them, leading about 4 salespeople. And then I left them and went to work for Southern States Cooperative, which was an East Coast cooperative. And I managed their sales force, their feed sales force. And then in 2017, Southern States sold the business, and I ended up going to work for Purina as a East Region Director, having from Southern Louisiana to Maine. So I had I had 9 direct reports with Purina, about 100 people in my line.
Well, that's a lot of responsibility and a lot of people across a lot of geography.
Yeah. I had a lot of great people.
In your experience over the years, Michael, what role did culture play into being able to keep people around, be intentional about, you know, curating spaces that people wanted to work. I'm curious what you looked at, what your teams looked at as it pertains to creating great culture.
Well, I think the first thing you got to do is be able to listen. And listening to your customer and listening to your employees. It's really important, Mark, that you bring your employees into discussions as to how you do things and how you make decisions. I had a boss that coined a phrase, discuss, decide, support. And that you bring people in as you're trying to make a decision and you discuss it. And then you decide what's the best course of action. And then once you've all decided, then everybody supports each other in that decision. Now, if I always told my team, I said, if you get down the road and it's not working, don't go out and tell the customer, don't go out and tell everybody else, come tell me. And then we make a decision as to do we wait longer and give it a little bit more time, or do we get everybody back together and do we reorganize and come up with a different decision? But I think, getting the right people on the bus, getting people that fit in that culture, and my culture, the culture I wanted was people wanted to succeed. And I always saw my job as a supervisor is get the roadblocks out of the way so that those people can succeed. Because if the most frustrating thing, and I think the reason a lot of successful people leave companies is they get frustrated. They don't feel like there's a way for them to be successful, so they get frustrated and they leave. I think that's a getting the roadblocks out of the way and giving them room to do what they need to do. It's very easy for a supervisor to become a micromanager. And it's so vitally important to train, to coach, and then to let them do their job. And I think it's really important that you recognize success and say thank you when somebody succeeds, whether it's a big thing or a small. And the another part of the of a winning culture or an intentional culture is to sit down, particularly with young people, and find out what their goals are. And then map out a plan for their career goals. And sometimes I'll sit down with somebody and they'll tell me what their goals are and they've got a BS, but everybody that I know that's got that job's got a master's or MBA. So you got to say, hey, you want that job? You need to go back to college. And here's the things you need to do to get it. I think if one of the reasons that young people in particular leave a company is because they don't see the path forward. So you got to give them that path and help them. And then another part of the culture that I wanted to create was knowing their family and understanding their family and who the members of their family are, taking their wives with them to dinner or getting to know their kids and what their kids' activities are so that you know more about that family and understand when they come to you with an issue and they've got something that they need to take care of family wise, you can have a better understanding. And then the other part of that is I think it's really important to get the families together. So, if you can have events where you bring the families in and if it's a whole lot easier to leave a company if you're just leaving one person. But if my spouse is friends with another spouse, then I'm not just leaving the company, I'm leaving my friends. And my spouse is leaving her friends. Their kids may be leaving their friends. So I think that's critically important. And then having frank, respectful, meaningful conversations with even your best performers on how they can improve. Because, Mark, I believe if you're not improving, you're going backwards. And when you are trying to drive a culture of intention, and you're trying to drive the right behaviors, if you could boost talent in a even really good talent because they get stuck in a rut and they fail to continue to improve. So, and then I like another thing I like to do is ask how I can be a better boss. And how can I support you better? What do I need to do to support you better? And really listen and have a meaningful conversation around that. 'Cause I tell you what, over my years, I've been coached pretty well by some people as to how I could do my job better.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you for that answer, and I'm going to just tell those that are listening at whatever time of day and wherever you are right now, my recommendation is to rewind or go back about 6, maybe 7 minutes in your podcast player, wherever you're getting this, or on YouTube, and re-listen to what Michael just shared. Go back and listen to that again, because he just gave you a bullet point checklist for how to evaluate yourself on whether or not you're being intentional and what you need to do in order to do so. Go back and listen to that. So I want to thank you for that answer. It's fantastic.
Hey team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this, and our coaching programs and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there.
And you mentioned a few things in here. I want to pull this apart just a little bit. So I want to recap that really quick. One is just listening, help them have a voice, discuss, decide, support, attract a culture of people that, or create a culture within which people want to succeed, remove the roadblocks, give them the room, give them enough rope to go run and do some things, say thank you when they do a good job, find out what their goals are, get to know their family, get their families together. Have frank, meaningful coaching conversations, be respectable, respectful conversations, but have them, coach even your top performers and get feedback on you. There's a quick synopsis of that. So I love all this. And one of the reasons that I'm making this podcast is not that people don't intuitively know these things. I think we intuitively know these are the things that we ought to do. When you read this in a this makes sense. Nothing about this doesn't make sense, right? Nothing about this seems even terribly hard. It's a simple enough concept, maybe not easy to pull off, right? That's where intention comes in. That's why intentional leadership is so important. Why do you think, Michael, why do people get it wrong so often?
I think you have to go back and and evaluate yourself more. I have to, I tried to get in a habit of every once in a while, about once a week, just saying hey, or and lots of times after a conversation, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? Asking myself, where have I varied from my core values? A lot of the things I talked about are core values of mine. Where have I varied from those? How have I missed that? And I think sometimes we get so caught up in the whirlwind. There's so many things coming at us today in business. I used to get some days 300 emails. You get all those emails coming, you get phone calls coming, you get all the stuff coming in, and all of a sudden you're short. You don't respond like you should, and you don't think through things. So, I've tried in my career to have wildly important goals. What are my goals, and what's really important to me getting things done today? And part of that, it's not a goal, but it's a behavior, is take time, stop, and evaluate Mike. And what Mike done, and how has Mike done today? And that really, I think, has helped me over the years to stay focused and stay on track.
How did you start doing that? If someone was thinking, hey, it's a great idea. I know I should. Man, I'm busy. I'm responding to those 300 emails every single day. So it's not 300, that's 1500 a week. Right. I mean, have that plus the phone calls and the travel and the road time and constant demands on my time. And that's just work. That doesn't even include family. And I've got three little kids, it's a lot of, we have a lot of people right now for whatever reason. I got five, three of them under five. So how did you get started, or how would you recommend someone get started making that intentional time for themselves?
So I think you got to set up a time every week just to be in your office by yourself and thinking. You got to set aside a couple hours a week, and that's what you do. You're by yourself, you're thinking, you're planning, you're just, and that's what I tried to do, is I tried to take 2 hours a week and just think. Get away from everything, get in my office, lock my door, and think. And you can do that. When you're on a, when I was in my last role and the role before, it's on airplanes a lot. You get to think in the airplane, you think in the car, you take the time when you're kind of away from people, and you start evaluating things, and you evaluate yourself, and you evaluate the business. You gotta make time to think. And I can tell you, Mark, that I started out as a, when I started my career and I started managing people, I was probably the worst manager there ever was. I micromanaged. If you talk to the guys that I first started managing, they'll tell you I was a micromanager. I drove them nuts. What cured me, I probably should have been fired because I was bad. What cured me was that I wanted to be successful, and I kept getting more things put on my plate, and I couldn't get them all done. And so I had to back away from micromanaging. It was forced. And then as I backed away, guess what? People around me started being happier, and they started being more successful. And I figured out, hey, if I can help them be more successful, if I can listen better to them, if I can do the things that help them more, guess what? Business works better. I'm happier. They're happier. It all works together. And it was a growing process for me. It didn't just happen overnight. It took some time. And it was funny, I had a guy that had worked for me in my first management stint, And then he worked for me again later, about 10 years later, and he said, "Man, you're completely different." And I took that as a compliment because, and he meant it as a compliment, but it was a growing process.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful example, a wonderful story, and I hope that provides encouragement to the listeners, because that's what happens when you take that feedback, you take that time, like you started out. It has to become almost a personal requirement to go and take a couple hours a week to actually sit down, stare out the window and think. And a lot of people don't give themselves room to just think, you know, because we're constantly under the gun. We've got people to get back to. We got requests for our time, demands. We feel like if we have time to sit around, we ought to be doing something. And at Thrive Today, that's a mindset that we've been working to bust now for almost 12 years. And we've been successful with some, but the problem is still there. So there's a lot of work yet to do. I have to share this relevant story. And this was at home. So there's a men's group in my neighborhood that gets together to work out at 5:30 in the morning. Now on the weeks when it's my time to drive kids to school in the morning, we have to leave. We're about 35 minutes into Chapel Hill, so we got to leave here by 6:45 in order to get my son there for drop-offs by 7:25 and everything else in between. So I got three kids, one in middle school, one in high school, one in elementary, three different places. It's a logistical battle every morning, and it's like we got to get them on, you know, you got to get them up, get them breakfast, get them fed, get their school stuff packed, get everybody out the door. So, of course, I've been riding herd over this ever since we moved to North Carolina about 2 years ago. Well, I wanted to go to this workout, but in order to do that, that means somebody else is going to have to manage this, and I don't have anybody else around that time of day to help make that happen. And so, I finally I got the idea. I said on a Sunday night. At Sunday night family dinner, I told the kids, I said, after dinner, I want you to get your lunch boxes out and get your lunches packed, whatever you're going to take to school tomorrow for lunch, get that stuff packed and ready, just so you know. And tomorrow morning, you got to get yourselves up. Okay. I'm going to this workout. I need you guys to be able to handle, you know, this little piece. Get yourselves up, get your lunches packed, get your school stuff ready, you know, and be ready to go. And so I went to that workout that morning. I did the thing, and I rushed back, thinking I'm going to have to get them out of bed. We're going to be late. And I get back there. I get back to the house at 6:30 in the morning, and here's all three of them dressed, ready, packed, fed. Hey, Dad, let's go.
And what great training for your kids, Mark.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So I said, "Well,
What
that's
great
pretty good.
training.
Let's see if we can do that 2 days in a row." They did. Let's do 3 days in a row. Let's do it. Well, it turns out, you know, when you think about what's the problem. I was the problem. As
It
long as
was
I'm there,
good training for you too, wasn't it?
exactly. As long as I'm there micromanaging the situation, right? They take longer. They wait for me to tell them to do things, right? So I just said, hey, here's the outcome. This is what success looks like. We're out the door no later than 6:45. You guys got to have all your stuff ready to go, have your breakfast, et cetera. And, you know, it taught me a lot about business too, because now I'm passing things off to my team faster. And I just say, hey, here's the this is what success looks like. Okay, let me know if you need any coaching, any help, additional resources. But this is on, you know, this is yours. Let me know how it goes, right? So, man, I'm curious, over the course of your career, was there any one or two big challenges that you had to face that really helped you become who you became and all the responsibility that you had? What was one of the big challenges you had to face, Mike?
Well, I guess the biggest thing was getting over Mike, you know, just and we already talked about it. It was learning not to micromanage, getting past me. So that was probably the biggest challenge that I had was I thought I had to do it all, and I had to learn that I couldn't. And you know what that stemmed from, Mark, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out why was I like that? And there were two reasons. One is lack of confidence in myself. You know, I think sometimes when we micromanage, we don't have the confidence in ourselves to surround ourselves with the right kind of people. And not that I didn't have the right people, I did. But I think I was afraid that they would outshine me, that they would be stronger than I was. So that was part of it, was a lack of confidence in me. And then the second thing was a lack of confidence in them, to get the job done. And just like you said with your kids, once you gave them the rein, they did it. And so I think as I look back on my career, the thing I learned real quickly was, or I guess it took me a little longer than real quickly. It was the thing I learned was the better people I surround myself with, the better job we're going to do. I did learn that I'm not smart enough. I was never smart enough to have a bunch of yes people around me. I needed people around me that would challenge me, that would challenge my ideas, because oftentimes my ideas weren't that great. But if I got everybody around me talking and I had the right people around me, then we could come up with some good stuff. So the biggest challenge I had was getting over Mike.
You bet. No, that's great. That's a great answer. What would you qualify, looking back over your career, what was your biggest win then?
It was the people that it's no doubt it's the people that have I have seen succeed throughout my career. One of the earlier people that I had that I was able to manage is has become a senior leader in a major company. Another one is a senior he is a national sales ma manager in a major company. I've had some people that have succeeded in all types of businesses, and it's just the biggest wins have come from watching those people succeed. And I had a yesterday, I had a young man call, and little things like this I consider huge wins. He had just landed a another job with a pretty big company, and it was a nice promotion for him. And he called me and he said, "I just want to thank you." He said, "You're somebody that believed me in me, and you're somebody that encouraged me and critiqued me, and you helped me along the way." And Mark, I can't tell you how humbling that is first, but how rewarding that is also.
Well, there's no better feeling than seeing someone maybe even step into the role that once that you once had,
Exactly.
right? And be able to do the things that only you could do. And it just when you get to that stage where we're there in our business now, where I can't be the guy who does all the speaking and training in front of the room anymore. There was a time and a place in the beginning where that was it. I even called the business Mark Jewell Speaking and Training because that was as far as my vision could see, right? When I was 32 or whenever I started it. But then as we progressed, it became very clear that if we were going to grow, if we were going to have the level of impact that I would hope to be able to have, and maybe some more, it would require others. And now sitting in the back of the room, I have more pride, more joy. I really more joy watching others do it because it's fun. Now they're getting to live out that experience. They're getting that connection with the audience. They're getting to be now the people that are helping those people, right? Be able to succeed more. So I can certainly relate with you there. Who is somebody that you looked up to, admired, that had a big impact on you over your career?
So there were so many people, it's hard to choose just one, Mark. I mean, my supervisors, my customers, the guys, even the guys that were on my team, the people that were on my team, my peers. I mean, they're all, even guys out in the feed mills that would teach me a nugget or two. I just had so many people, but if I had to narrow it down to two, it would be my mom and dad. And my dad was an ag teacher and quit teaching ag because he felt the call to the ministry. And he and my mom were true servant leaders. They truly sacrificed themselves for others. My dad grew up, he grew up on a farm. His father had been a successful farmer. And when my dad was 5 years old, he was in a wreck with a drunk driver, and my granddad lost his leg, and it was right during the middle of the Depression. He was in the hospital. Gangrene set into his leg, and he was in the hospital for a year during Depression. They were farmers, so my dad started picking cotton at 5 years old. So there
Jeez.
were two things that my dad, you just didn't do in my house. One was whine, and the other one was say, "I can't." My dad believed that you could overcome just about anything.
You bet.
And so, I would say that watching the way that they treated others, their servant leadership, and then the persistence that my dad taught me would have been the biggest thing. He and my mom would have had the biggest impact.
Wonderful. What a great tribute and a great lesson. Just you, he created a culture where whining and
Oh,
negativity
yeah.
not.
Yeah, you didn't do that in my house.
It's amazing how powerful culture is, because that's what it
It
is. And my
is.
wife and I work really hard to curate culture around here, and we call it the culture of gravitas. That's sort of our family business name. All of our businesses are owned under Gravitas Enterprises, but Gravitas stands for something, right? There are core values to Gravitas. There are things
Sure.
that, we sit around and teach at the dinner table, like stewardship, right? And what it means to have fun and what freedom is, right? Those are, when you curate that space, right, it becomes, you can depend on that, and that will grow. Like, those are seeds that were planted, and look how they grew throughout your life in such an exponential way that those able to impact so many people that you led and had impact on and so forth. So, it's interesting when you look back at the lineage of an idea, right? And we can look back to, this career that I had, maybe stemmed back to my grandfather getting in an accident and then ending up in the hospital for a year, right? But God doesn't let these experiences go to waste, right? Like,
That's
He leverages
exactly
all
right.
things for good, right? And so, I know you know what I'm talking about, but it's amazing how that manifests over now, many decades. So, what do you read that others ought to be reading? What do you pay attention to from a content standpoint that you'd recommend people tune into?
So the first book that there's quite a number of things that I would tell you, Mark, but the first book that I'd recommend is the Bible. The Bible, there's so many life, whether you're Christian or not, I mean, if you read it, there's so many life lessons there. There's so many things that on how we should treat others, in that book that it's just a great book to read. Another book that I've found very helpful in managing people is the execution. Gosh, I can't think of the name of it. Hang on just a minute. The Four Disciplines of Execution.
Response, you bet. Yep.
Yeah, Four Disciplines of Execution is an outstanding book. It's helped me put together a format. So often in business, we don't execute very well. We have a great idea. We know where we're going with it, but then the execution fails because we get so caught up in that whirlwind.
You
And
bet.
the four disciplines really give you a platform to make sure that you're executing correctly. Then two others that I'd recommend is It's Your Ship. It's Your Ship is by a Navy captain, and it teaches responsibility and it teaches ownership. And the last one that I'd really have enjoyed over my career and read several times is good to great. And so many businesses, it's just how do you go from good to great in a business? And I just think that's an outstanding book by Jim Collins.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Yes,
That
it
is
is.
a classic. But those are four great recommendations. The Bible is such a, regardless of your belief system, it's such a playbook. It's such a great playbook
It
of
is.
and I resisted it for a long, long time. I grew up, around that stuff, but I didn't have that example in my life as a young person. So of course I would go to church and I would hear the scriptures and I would read them on occasion here and there, parsing through. And then when I started reading it cover to cover,
Oh, yeah.
everything changed. Then I finally saw how this is a playbook for how to live.
Yeah, it really is.
Really the guidebook for everything. So
Really
four
is.
disciplines of execution, I think that's a must for anybody for sure in an executive role, if not any leadership role. All really, really good. So Michael, we're pushing up on our time here. This has been fantastic, really, guys, a master class. I hope you go back and listen to this one again. Please share this with somebody who can benefit from the wisdom of Mike Helms on here with us today. Any what last thoughts would you share with us before we bring it in for a final landing?
Well, I'll go back to, in business today, there's so many people that don't know who the customer is. They don't understand the customer. They don't know the customer because they didn't grow up on a farm in ag business. They didn't, they didn't, they don't, so I think it's really key to get those people out to see the customer or get videos of the customers, tell them why their job's important. They need to understand why a pellet mill operator, what it means to do that, why that's important to somebody, why the guy in the back of the office doing accounting work, why is that important? So I think people understanding what their job is and why their job's important. Who our customer is and why their job's important to that customer is something that we're missing in business today, and we got to get people to understand. So that's what I'd leave you with.
Yeah. Fantastic. Last bit of advice. And I want to tap back on one thing that you shared earlier, Mike, as you're listing through some of these things from a leadership perspective, two of them, know their family and get the families together. We live in a world today, obviously, where we're more virtual than ever. That doesn't seem to be slowing down. But one policy I have and have had, I've always had a virtual business. We don't have a corporate office. We don't, from a business like mine, we can get talent from all over the country, all over North America for that matter. There's no point in having one, but there's a cost savings that comes with that. And I think a lot of companies are missing the opportunity. So they see that as a cost savings. So we cut that and that goes straight to the bottom line. We probably ought to take a percentage of that and add it back to leaders' budgets. This is my encouragement to people making budgets out there. Add some of that
Agreed.
money back to your budgets and set an expectation for taking people to dinner, team members to dinner, their families to dinner, getting them together for in-person meetups, sending them to personal development events together, whatever the case may be, but be really intentional about putting some of that back in because you've been taking it out for a long time.
I
Right? We
agree
always look for ways to
100%.
save, but I think there's some good to be done there and people need it. I think
Yes,
most
they
people
do.
this will agree. People need we need that personal human connection. We need to be intentional about bringing it back, and we need to be stop being so caught up about being busy, and look at what it takes to be more effective.
Agree. Agree wholeheartedly.
Good stuff. Where do we find out more about AgRx recruiters? As long as we got you here, is there a website for that, Mike, or what? Where do we send them?
So we're working on that right now, Mark. I'm on LinkedIn.
You bet.
Contact me on LinkedIn and
Perfect.
I would love to talk to and help. My goal now is to learn more about having my own business. I've been wanting to do that for years. So
Yeah, I like it.
I'm trying to learn more about doing that, and I want to be the best recruiter there is out there. So my son is in it with me. He's a licensed pharmacist, and that's where the RX comes from. But
Okay, wonderful. Very cool. All right, head up Michael Helms over there on LinkedIn, you guys. It's been a great info, a great interview. Make sure you share this along to somebody that needs to hear it. Thank you much, Mike, for being here.
thank you.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.